SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and we're back in New Orleans. We're back on the air. I had 3 days to prepare, and I still couldn't get the 10 o'clock break on time. 2 years at the Sorbonne, and she still gets it wrong. Johnny D joins us. Johnny, a rare Thursday appearance.
Well, you know, anything's liable to happen. I'm just glad you're back on the air. I didn't know what to listen to for 3 days.
You know, it's funny you say that. I was telling Casey, I spent a good portion of last evening answering emails. I didn't know I was as such a valuable part of everybody's life. you know, I think after the first day, everybody said, "Well, you know, we did 20 hours in Vegas," and I had every intention. We got a little, you can't, the equipment. There's only so much equipment I can carry around with me, you know, on these travels. But I should have some redundant, some redundant backup stuff to aid the production value.
Yeah, once in a while things happen. There's nothing you can do about it in the technical world, and it's nice to know you're wanted. So this was just gave people a reason to let you know that they miss you and they appreciate what you do. So maybe you do this. Maybe you plan to do this every so often, just so the ego gets a little massaging. It's funny because I'm usually on. You know, we usually talk Monday. Mondays at 10, and I certainly had planned to do that. And I was getting ready, and I remember thinking to myself, wait a minute now, he's been, it was almost 9 o'clock for the show to begin. I wanted to listen to it. So I went, as I was in the process of putting it on, I thought to myself, wait a minute, he's been in Vegas now for 5 days, maybe 6 days, whatever it's been. Last night was the end of the conclusion of the tournament. There was the dinner, the celebrations, I'm sure. I'm sure he went out with the guys. There's so many wonderful people there to talk to and to meet and to catch up with. And I thought to myself, it's 6 o'clock in Las Vegas. He's had time to adjust. Maybe he's not going to make it this morning.
That's funny.
And the thought had passed my mind, and then I remembered what a absolute pro you are, and I said, no, he'll be there. And then you weren't there. I said,
yeah, exactly. I threw you the curveball. it turned out to be electrical. It turned out to be an electrical thing. And it, in the there's like a transformer box that hooks up. And I was so shocked. Yeah, I go to plug in, and the thing is dark, and I'm like, wait a minute, we just finished here 9 hours ago. What could have happened between going to the ballroom to my room and back? How's that possible? But then Casey and I were trying to figure it out, and he said there's days where he comes in and there's pieces of equipment in the studio. He comes in, the thing is out, dead, nothing. Something just fries, and that's that. And that's
I mean, they put expiration dates on milk cartons.
That's
put one on your equipment.
That's a good point. That's exactly. Well, I got the nice thing is the older box that's been around 15 plus years, that was fine. It got a nice tune-up. But I told them send me two of these transformer cords. So I will have a backup. Because that's the second time in 15 years that one has gone on me. One went, maybe about 6 or 7 years ago. So the lifespan on that. Plus, they sent me this fascinating new thing that can operate on battery power and on Wi-Fi, which means you could just take it anywhere. You could go on the backstretch without electricity. You could do anything you want. It's very, we may be getting one of these.
You're going to be a little bit dangerous with that thing.
Could you imagine?
You'll be popping up everywhere.
Exactly, like a jack-in-the-box.
all those emails you got from people saying they missed you, cut them in half.
Exactly. It's enough already from with you. Well, I would have, and honestly, I would have thought that after 20 hours, and even more if you count the Friday preview show, I would have thought that 20 hours was enough. But I know you were listening in, and Pete's going to, we're going to get a recap and put a bow on NHC with Pete in a little bit. But it's just fun to, it's 7 hours on Saturday and Sunday, Johnny, and it's over in a blink. You're never looking for something to talk about or looking for somebody to talk to, because everywhere you look up, there's somebody to throw a microphone in front of.
Well, I listened to part of the live broadcast, and then actually, I think it was Monday, you replayed some of the discussion from Sunday, I believe. And I listened to it again. And the reason, well, besides the fact that I just love racing, I love any discussion of racing, but what I really enjoyed was listening to the guests you had, especially the Matisse family, listening to them dissect a race that I believe it was Oakland Park. They actually picked a winner and dissected the race on the air before the race. And that so rarely happens that everything works out so well. And they did such a great job. And I just have to say that many of the guests on the show, particularly the Matisse family, but also other guests that you had on the show are very free with their discussion, their information of how they've achieved. Mike Baychak was on there also, a former champion. How they look at races, how they look at strategy in the tournaments, how they think about this game, and I think that's really important for players to hear. I don't know if we can ever get enough of that. I really enjoy the stuff you're doing with Nick Tamaro. I really as far as not so much the actual who do you like, but the way he looks at a race, the way he picks, the way he sorts out A horses, B horses, C horses, how he builds tickets. That's all very interesting. And look, I've heard all that stuff before so many times that sometimes I confuse myself. But I think it's good to have refresher courses and in some cases new ideas that maybe you'll change the way you play or alter it slightly. Yet, as horse players, when we get to a certain age, we're very difficult to move, to change. We like the way we do things, and that's it. But sometimes you hear things that'll maybe let you add or remove a wrinkle in your process that ends up being significant. So I enjoy listening to all that stuff. And those guys were fantastic, and I thank them and you, obviously, but and Pete and everyone else who was on the broadcast, and Casey. I'm going to thank Casey, too. I'm sure he was involved. But thank the players, because they really do demystify what's going on. I mean, in your mind, you think of these guys as gods, these tournament players as gods, because they've either won it or they've been right there several times, or they've won tournaments around the country to get there, and it's the same names all the time, and this is what they do. They're professionals. To hear them break it down for you is wonderful.
And the one of the messages that you do get too out of the whole thing is, and in fact, Justin Dew, who made a nice run, and Justin, once he was sure that he was playing on Sunday in the semifinal, he joined us. He wouldn't come on to until he knew he was in. He's got his Lone Speed website, and he's written a couple of recaps of the way things went. And one of the messages that one of the takeaways that he was conveying was along those lines, Johnny, that and also that when you have conviction or you need conviction of your own opinion, and we reiterate this in different ways over and over again, when you think you see something, you probably have, and if you think it's a kernel of information that, you know, gives you the edge and is triggering your desire to bet, follow through, and do not let the people you're playing with, do not let second thoughts and you know any you know negative impressions or the things that hold us back, making us question our own judgment, don't let it inhibit you. Then if you cash, obviously it reinforces your own self-confidence in your opinion. If the horse doesn't win or doesn't run to expectation, make sure you understand maybe why, because you don't want to abandon that, whatever the concept was that led you to that spot and to that horse. Don't say suddenly to yourself, well, that doesn't work. I can't use that angle. I can't, use that approach, because it might work the next three times. And now you've you've not only spoiled, an opportunity, perhaps then you are affecting your long-term success rate.
Yeah, I think one of the most difficult for people who are playing in tournaments who are not professional players, they don't do it all the time, one of the most difficult things to adjust yourself to is that when you enter a tournament, you have to have confidence, but you have to be prepared to finish with zero. And that, in some people's minds, is like, oh, that's so terrible, that's awful. But you have to be prepared to back, as you said, to be confident in your picks, to back what you like. And if it's not your day, you may end up with zero. If your handicapping method, whether you're, say you're a speed guy, and that particular day, no matter where you go, things just don't work out as far as speed is concerned. You have to play reasonably priced horses, and you have to have confidence. But a lot of people are afraid to come away with zero, a zero score. And if you run through the list of players that were at this tournament, and you look at some of the names that had very low totals, you'll see some of the best players in the game. It happens. And you have to understand that it happens and not be, not get flustered by it. In other words, your first five picks don't hit the board. Oh, my God, I'll never catch up. You have to be stick, dance with the girl that brought you. Stay with what you know, and it'll work, or it won't. And if it doesn't, you know what? You'll get them next time. That's, horse players have to have, what is the memories like, NFL cornerbacks. You get beat for a touchdown early in the game, and maybe you get beat for some big plays, but you can't lose confidence. You've got to hang in there, because you may make the interception, that turns the game around. So don't give up. But that zero is a, you hear people say, well, at least they didn't finish with zero. But it's a possibility. When these guys go all in these money tournaments to win, they're playing to win. And that's what you have to do. So you have to have confidence, back what you know. You, if you're in the NHC, you did something to get there. You weren't invited. You earned your way there. So that means you know what you're looking at, or else you had a lucky day. And you know what? Maybe you can have another lucky day. But you have to go in there, you know, with confidence.
Well, and all you have to do is, if, for those that didn't hear Dave Goodfriend from Friday to Sunday, if I were to carve out, maybe we could even do that, carve out David's appearance from Friday when he was just, he was shrugging off, taking an offer, not with one of his sets of plays, but both. He just absolutely, he said, if you play this, not just play contest. This discussion is not confined to contest play. It's any kind of play. Your bankroll Monday through Sunday. He said it's a badge of honor for a lot of the guys that, you know, he also told a very funny, if you missed it on Friday, he told a very funny story about a serious player in the media who would refuse to take the zero, who would take a three-to-five shot at the end of a contest if he was on an 0-for-9, he was going to go 1-for-10. But that good friend, from Friday to Saturday he makes this run that puts him in position to maybe play till Sunday and capitalize on his $5 million opportunity. So that's a perfect example. There were plenty of people who had $20 and $30 on Friday, going into Saturday, and ended up playing on Sunday. So, and none of them, none of them thought they were out of it, when they had a modest day on Saturday, on Friday.
Another guy you had on who's an excellent player, and it was interesting his interview for different reasons, Tommy Masses. He was bemoaning, I think, if I remember correctly, he was bemoaning his play, that I'm not doing anything, it's not working today. These are good players. These are the best players in the world. But you can hang in there. You have to hang in there and not be afraid to take some chances. Don't take crazy chances, but if they make a little sense to you as you started this conversation, stick with it. If you see something, stick with it.
Well, before we talk about the Rainbow Six payout, I want to get your anatomy of play. Since we're talking contest, let's get a Beat the Host update in, because we're winding down. We're looking just a couple more weeks, and I didn't get a chance, actually, to look and see how people fared and what went on.
Well, our host this week was Ron Nicoletti. You know him from Gulfstream Park, and he was only able to come up. He came up with two winners. They were short price winners, and his total was $14. So again, the hosts have had a rough season this year. Generally, I believe Jeff Siegel, John White have done the best so far. But as a player, you have to remember, beating the host, there are two ways to look at this competition. There's beating the host, which then gets you into the Beat the Host Championship, where there are excellent cash prizes. You got $5,000 to first, $4,000 to second, on down, fifth through tenth gets $500. So there's Beat the Host Championship. But what also happens in the Beat the Host Championship is the top 30 players from that move on to Express Bet Showdown, which is really where you want to be, because in Showdown, first place is $20,000, $8,000 for second, $6,000 for third, $4,000 for fourth, and $2,000 for fifth. You want to get into Showdown. Now, you can buy your way into Showdown for $300 entry fee, but trying to win your way in to qualify is a much better way of doing it, and it begins by beating the host. And this week's host is a regular guest on your show. Tom Quigley from Santa Anita is going to be this week's host, and he's he's kind of spouted off a little bit on Twitter. So he had a, I don't know if you saw his poem, check Quigley's timeline, and he had a nice little poem there. I guess I'm thinking it's in honor of Valentine's Day. I don't have it handy, but check his timeline and you'll see it. So that'll be fun. And as far as the sweep the host candidates, right now we're looking at 69 players, which you and I have done this for several years, many years now, and probably as long as we've been on the air. And we've never had that many people alive with just 2 weeks remaining. Last week's winners, it was a... what did I do with it? I don't have it handy. Steve. See, you threw me off. By not being on the air.
You would have been ready. You would have been ready on Monday.
I would have been as prepared as you can be. I would have had not only their names, I would have had their social security numbers, I'd have had everything. Okay. Oh man. The results, the chant from last week, Saturday, February 9th, Robert Raimondo. 215 was his total, $1,500 prize. Chris Bertolucci. Now there's a name I've seen in tournaments for many years. $214, $1 behind, $750 prize. And Melissa Gelati, $205.50, and she gets a $250 prize. So the great thing about the conclusion of Beat the Host, we only have 2 weeks left. Each year I get excited about this, not because I want to see Beat the Host end, but because it means January and February are over.
Yeah, good point.
and we're into March, and that is, we have the Beat the Host Championship, then we'll have Express Bet Live, and then we'll have the Showdown. And the top 30 players in Beat the Host Championship and the top 30 players in ExpressBet Live will qualify for Showdown. So that's where you want to get. You want to beat the host, get in the championship, and then you want to finish in the top 30 and move on to Showdown.
Excellent. Well, I know that you mentioned Quigley, and Quigley was talking trash on Twitter. He's like, throwing stuff at players. He was like daring them
That's
to beat
I said.
Him.
He's being very bold.
How many sweep players right now?
69.
Wow.
That is a wow. Well, I think it tells you that the popularity of Beat the Host, you know, has increased. But also the host had a rough year this year.
Yeah, it's been tough.
Yeah, yeah. And people have got the hang of it now. And you say, well, the players have a big advantage because they get to look at the host picks and they get to study the races. And I say, yeah, that's true. You know, that is a big advantage. However, the hosts are the ones picking the races.
That's true.
In the first place.
That's true.
So, but that just shows, it just, you know what? This kind of connects to what we have just finished saying. You look down our host list, the people we have as hosts, intelligent people, no horse racing inside and out, can handicap, can pick winners. So what happens? That happens sometimes. You know? What you do, it doesn't work on that particular day. Doesn't mean you, even though sometimes we may think that we know nothing, the knowledge is still in there and it's going to work again. And that's why the bankroll stuff is so critically important, because nobody picks winners all the time. You're going to have terrible losing streaks. I can promise you right now, I don't care who you are going to have a horrible losing streak. And it's how you manage your funds during that time as to whether you're forced to quit the game or whether you hit that big payday. You got to stay in the game. because if you're in the game, you've got a chance. And that's it took me a long time to realize that if you're not in the game, you can't score a touchdown. You got to be in the game. You got to be playing. You got to be on the field.
Exactly.
And,
Well, the other play that we wish everybody good luck this week, and look forward to Quigley, and we'll have Quigley tomorrow. We'll get a chance to talk to Tom. And the Santa Monica came up phenomenal. Just when you thought the Distaff division was, you know, was on the side of the road with a blown gasket. Everybody you could have imagined showed up in the Santa Monica. So we're looking forward to talking to Quigley tomorrow on Weekend Preview. Johnny, let's get a Rainbow Six treatment. And, of course, 101,000, and there were a handful of winners in both of the ballrooms, the main ballroom and the auxiliary on Saturday, including the Canadian developer that we talked to, hit it twice, no less. What were your impressions, and how did you approach it, and what's the aftermath?
Yeah, well, that collective groan you heard about 3:17 Saturday afternoon was the majority of 22 million Rainbow Six tickets. The owners of those tickets just being knocked out in the first leg. You know, I understand. This comes back to ticket construction. I don't know where else to look. Handicapping is important. You've got to have the right horses. However, looking at a race and deciding, this race is an all race. Or is a potential all race. I don't like anyone in this race, I like too many. That's another possibility. I can see seven or eight of these winning. As you mentioned earlier, you can hit the all button with the 20-cent Rainbow Six. It's cost prohibitive with a $2 pick six. If there was ever an example of the all button, of how to use the all button, it was the opening leg of this Rainbow Six. Papa Y wins, pays $118, and nearly everyone has been eliminated. I mean, that's where you want to be as a player. You want to be where everyone else isn't. You want to be left when everyone else is gone home. You still want to be at the party. And I was long gone, out. And That race was begging to be an all button, and I didn't construct my ticket well enough to win. And it's not really handicapping. We sometimes beat ourselves up because we didn't pick the winner. But when you're playing these kinds of wagers, it's important to understand what's a spread race, what's a single. And you really have to get better at that, identifying the race type. I'd say it's either Steve Martin or Queen Elizabeth. In other words, it's either going to get wild and crazy or it's going to be traditional. And you have to kind of have that feeling. And you have to, train yourself to then know where to make your singles and where not to. Now, I must have heard on the show, on your show, your broadcast, that one of those winning tickets had three singles in the last three legs.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you would say, well, hindsight's 20/20 and blah, blah, blah. No, if you're a horse player, look, in the fourth leg, you had Global Champagne. Well, that was a single, I think, on probably the majority of tickets that had singles. That was a single. That one looked pretty good to me. The next leg you ended up with Hembry, the Mike Maker trained horse. Okay. I could see where you maybe had to use three or four to get to that one. But also I could see where you would say there's two in here. So that one, but that wasn't an all race, I didn't think. It was a kind of a halfway spread race. And then in the last, Cafe Americana, that easily could have been a single.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you have someone who's, and you had another Chad Brown turf winner. So we've got two Chad Brown turf winners.
Clause. Yeah, and I don't think any, I don't see how any, I mean, you had to be, to single Hembra. I think maybe they might have singled the two Chads and Global Campaign. I don't know. Hembry was like my seventh horse. I didn't like Hembry a little bit.
I had Hembry on my ticket, but I think I went like four or five deep in that race.
Yeah,
I agree.
Tough race.
I agree. I didn't see $7 on Hembry.
No.
I mean, in my handicapping. But, you know, here's a player who says single here, single there. Boy, you do that at 20 cents a throw, you can hit the all button once, maybe twice, depending on your budget. The second leg winner was difficult to have, I thought, but not impossible. Certainly not impossible.
Trilby,
yeah. Again, rather deep, but that felt like that kind of race to me. And everybody's different. But that brings us back to what we said earlier. Whatever you do, stick with it, because your day will come. The day that you see the proper way to play the Rainbow Six or the Pick Six or whatever you're doing. Oh, so what do we do when we get knocked out in the Pick Six? You come back in the Pick Five, which starts in the next race. You get knocked out in the first leg. You gotta come back in the Pick Five. So here I go, jumping back in with both feet, and I miss Trilby in the first leg.
Yeah.
Now I have the other four in both tickets, obviously, but I miss Trilby. Why? I didn't go deep enough in that leg. And you know where I wasted? And I looked at my tickets and I say, I would send myself to my room if I could. I spread in the last race. And Chad Brown had the rail with a first time starter that Mike Welch was on a preview show that they did on ExpressBet. After the login page, they had a preview show, a video, and that was one. I mean, Mike talked about several races, but that was one that he actually said, this is an A on your ticket. He went out of his way to say, this is an A. And here I am spreading all over the place for what reason? But that's where you go back after the races and you look at what you did. And you say, where did I stumble? Well, here's where you stumbled, you moron. I love the Goldberg. He calls his kids moron. here's where you stumbled. You used a bunch of horses in a race that you didn't need. And when you do that, what happens? The rest of your ticket becomes punchless because you wasted all your... These things are tough to hit. They're incredibly difficult to hit. And when you waste a bunch of bullets firing at ghosts, when the real bad guy comes, there's nothing left in the gun. So that's what happened. Was it handicapping? Not really. I knew that horse certainly had a better than average chance to win. I knew about Mike Welch's comment. I knew the workouts were good. I knew all that stuff. It was ticket construction. It was not taking a stand. It was not believing in what you know and what you see. And all you have to do is, it only takes one of those. One mistake, you're done. You're out. Go home. You know, six races. You missed one. See you later. Thanks for playing. and we have no parting gifts for you. You just go home. Just go.
Don't let the horse kick you on the way out.
Don't let the door hit your empty wallet on the way out.
Exactly.
But anyway, well, again, we've had the discussions about the Rainbow Six. You know, there was a buzz. There was an excitement. And you've got, look at the guys in the room there in Vegas playing it. And you've got people all around the country, and you've got opinions flying left and right. And who doesn't? What media expert doesn't put up their pick six ticket? Like they're ever going to actually hit a pick six ticket by giving it to you, but it's interesting to hear people's opinions and to digest it all and do the handicapping and put the puzzle together when the pool is so big or going to be so big. And if you're right, $100,000, that's a nice hit.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that's not life changing, but that sure is life enhancing. $100,000 is a nice, it's a nice swipe. That's a really nice swipe. And when are you going to have a chance to swing at something like that again? I'm starting to look at the calendar saying, how long is it going to take for Santa Anita's to get back up there? And they got unlucky, obviously, with the weather. How long is it going to take Gulfstream? Maybe it's going to be Derby Day. Maybe they'll give it away. I'm starting to now look for more of these big days because they're fun. I lost my ass. I got killed. But the preparation is fun. The excitement. I didn't get much fun out of the day's races because I was gone in the first leg. But even still, watching it happen, watching your number of tickets diminish, seeing which horses win, knowing that if you'd done things a little differently, it could have been me. It's not that, I can't single Chad Brown a turf race? There's two turf races. He wins two of them.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of Chad Brown turf races, I'll take that opportunity, that window, to mention, Johnny, before we go, that Naira is going to add a sequence. They're going to add two races, Saratoga and then Belmont Fall, to the Belmont Oaks and the Belmont Derby to create turf triples. Going to add a Saratoga turf derby and a Oaks and then a Jockey Club derby and Oaks. To create a heavy money sequence for turf tiara for the girls and a turf triple for the boys, the turf trinity.
Yeah, we're kind of becoming a turf nation now. I'm happy that this is happening because any races that attract the best. Either from here or from Europe or wherever, worldwide, I'm in favor of, and it's going to be exciting. But we're moving in a turf direction. You notice that things are, the fields are bigger, the races are more strategically oriented, they're exciting. Usually on turf, horses finish a lot closer together than they do on dirt. There are, positives to it. And we're kind of, as a, I don't want to say industry, but as a game, we're moving more and more in that direction. The only thing is, we have to do something about the weather.
Well, they get away with it. They get away with it, okay, in Europe. And by the way,
but they only race 5 days or 3 days.
But it gets. They there's plenty of occasion where they'll get even during the prime meetings and stands that they'll be the lousy weather. I should slip in the story. I only I think I only mentioned it in passing last week before it became a crisis, but they resumed racing yesterday in the UK after a six-day hiatus on a horrific situation that had horses breaking out ill everywhere, and you know, a more or less an equine flu, and they said let's just suspend, and seems to have gotten things under control. I guess there, you know, no new cases, or the whatever new cases have slowed down, and horses have been isolated. But quite a. I don't think I could ever remember that happening. I look forward to a visit with Dr. Alday next week, maybe, and ask him. I mean, we've talked about, you know, when there's been herpes outbreaks and so forth, you know, there might be quarantines, but not, you know, not complete suspension of racing.
But it just shows you, it just reminds you of how fragile, you know, when you rely on living creatures, animals, you know, it really is. It's fragile because things can happen. And I'm glad they were able to kind of get it back under control quickly. You know what else? I was reminded of something else that was fragile. And it was your replays that jogged my memory and kind of reminded me of how fragile the Triple Crown is. Now, we're at an interesting point right now. There's a couple of things going on with the Triple Crown. Is it easy now to win? I don't think so. And what reminded me of that is listening to your discussion with Stuart Elliott. I heard on the replay. And he talked about the Belmont Stakes and Smarty Jones and his ride and what was happening, what went on. And if any horse, any of the near-miss Triple Crown horses, Smarty Jones was about as solid as they come. I mean, he was fast. He was, you know, he was sharp. He was, you know, with all those things. And it just goes to show you how difficult. And it's not always the competition. In fact, it's rarely the competition. What stops Triple Crown winners is the event itself, the calendar, the test. The test is what stops them, what keeps them from achieving the Triple Crown. And I don't think this is going to become a regular thing. I really don't. But let's see. I don't know everything. And I don't think that horses are going to be able to make their first start in February and win the Triple Crown. That's not going to happen. And they're not going to start in February and win the Kentucky Derby. It's not going to become a regular occurrence, in my opinion, because it's physically so difficult to do. It is physically, it's hard because you're fighting the calendar. Forget about the competition. I know there are less foals. I know all that stuff. I know. But you're fighting the calendar, you're fighting the test, you're fighting history. It's difficult. And that's what I believe. And, you know, the Triple Crown is fragile. And I feel for people, especially those people on Jeopardy, who didn't know the name of the Triple Crown winner. Although we have been redeemed.
A Preakness winner. Emerald Downs.
Emerald Downs. Yeah. So we have yes. to redeem.
Well, I think I saw a Preakness question.
Last night they had a Preakness question. Yeah. And by the way, Alex Trebek, I've seen him at owners' meetings in California. I mean, he was, I don't know if he still is, but he was involved in racing. I don't know if people know that generally.
Yeah, of course. He did some breeding, too.
Yeah.
He and his mother.
So, you know, that fragility of the Triple Crown is really, and for people, my point was, for people who didn't recognize Justify's accomplishment, they're going to. At some point in their lives, they're going to look back and say, you know, like I do with John Henry. They're going to look back and they're going to say, you know what? That was an amazing horse, an amazing accomplishment, and I didn't really appreciate it like I should have.
Well, you can appreciate it. The next time we'll be able to appreciate it is when Lenny Shulman's book comes out, and now just 6 weeks away or so, apparently, and Lenny's definitive telling of the Justify story.
I didn't know Lenny could write.
A little bit. More than one-liners. He's going to have to do more than his usual one-liners. Johnny, I appreciate this, and we'll catch up next week.
Stevie, thank you very much. I'm glad you're back in the sky, and I'm glad you're going to see Tina this weekend. Have a wonderful time in the Big Easy.
I appreciate it. Johnny D, everybody. XB, Johnny D. Let's take a break here. Steve Askin's going to join us after this.